Hello and welcome to episode 384 of the UK True Crime Podcast. I'm Adam. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Have you bought your tickets yet for my new live show in South Shields in June? If not, just check on the Customs House website and get your tickets today. It's going to be a great night and it's your round at the bar. This week I head to the southwest of England and look at a story which involves socialising with friends and then the dangers that were very real on the walk home. And not in some quiet side street, but in a city centre. There are no adverts today. Yeah, me too. So let's quickly set some context for today's story with our guest the month and year game. Top of the UK charts was loads of stuff I can't pronounce without sounding like a real old git. At number 8 was Harry Styles with Watermelon Sugar. It's similar in the US, but at 5 was Blinding Lights from The Weeknd. And in Australia, the top album this week was The Killers with Imploding the Mirage. In the news this month, a strain of bacteria nicknamed Conan the Bacterium survived 3 years attached to the International Space Station in open space. Now, you don't get that sort of fact on Wondery, do you? The San Francisco Bay Area was blanketed by dark orange skies and smoke due to California wildfires. It was the time of COVID, a genuinely frightening time for many of us, which exposed a number of ineffective and discredited gravy trains, one example being the World Health Organization, which this month reported largest ever one-day COVID-19 case rises of 307,930, a daily death toll of 5,500, and the overall death total of 917,000. And in UK true crime news, the former Conservative MP Charlie Elphick was jailed for 2 years for sexually assaulting two women in 2007 and 2016. It was September 2020. Next week, huh? Today's story comes from Exeter, a really pretty, I think, city on the River Exe in Devon, around 35 miles northeast of Plymouth and 65 miles southwest of Bristol. As someone lacking much culture, to me it's best known for the successful rugby team, the Exeter Chiefs, and as the birthplace of Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay. 32-year-old Lorraine Cox had been in a relationship with Elise Fallow for a couple of years. When we joined the story today, they were engaged. They'd met in 2018 and they lived in Exeter together before moving up to Scotland in October of the following year with Elise's child from a previous relationship. They moved away after Lorraine had been sexually assaulted in Exeter in May 2018 by a man called Robert Prout. He was later found guilty of this assault and raping another woman by a jury at Exeter Crown Court, and he was jailed for 10 years. Now, as we all know, lockdown was a super tough period, and it affected us all in ways we sometimes didn't quite expect. And Lorraine wanted to see her friends and family back home in Exeter. So she headed back to the city on August the 14th, and when she left, Elise could never have known that it was the very last time she would see Lorraine, and all their plans for their future together would never reach fruition. On the late bank holiday Monday in August of that year, 2020, Lorraine had been out with some of her friends in Exeter at the arcade and on Exeter Quay. It had been a great evening with lots of laughs, and rather than get a taxi or a lift with someone she knew, Lorraine decided to walk the 2 miles or so to where she was living with her dad in the Beacon Heath area of Exeter. It was a warm night as Lorraine waved to her friends and happily walked off through the centre of the city. But over the next few days, Lorraine began to act strangely in the way she communicated with her friends on Facebook and on text, and she refused to meet them. Then she suddenly announced that she was starting a brand new life in Plymouth. Now this just made no sense at all to her friends and family, and they desperately looked for her. They thought something was seriously wrong. And finally, a week after that night out with friends, her dad went to where she was staying and he saw that her diabetic medication was still there. This wasn't like Lorraine, she needed that diabetic medication, so he reported her as missing to the police. CCTV of the night in question soon identified Lorraine as she walked through the city centre. From the CCTV, it can be seen that although she wasn't falling about and staggering, she is clearly pretty drunk as she winds her way across the streets. But then it was clear that she was being followed. This first happened when she was sitting on a bench having a kebab. But certainly over the next mile or so, a youngish man followed her before it seemed she became aware of him and began speaking to him. From there, the man is then walking closely with Lorraine with his arm around her. And it's unclear whether this is just to hold her or maybe to coerce her. The pair then turned off the main street and disappeared from the view of CCTV. This man was quickly traced to a kebab shop in the centre of Exeter. He told police that his name was Christopher Mayer and he was originally from the Kurdish region of Iraq and had only been in Exeter since July, just a few months. Since arriving in Exeter, he'd been living in a room above the Bodrum Kebab House in 4th Street, although he didn't work there. He said he had been working some of the time he'd been in the UK, selling black market tobacco. He didn't seem to know many people around, he kept himself to himself, and he was only on nodding terms with the other people living there by the kebab house, and he kept some privacy by using a door at the back of the shop to come in and out of the property. Christopher Mayer said he had nothing to do with the disappearance of Lorraine. The very next day, police officers searched the alleyway behind Christopher's flat, and they soon found the dismembered arms and legs of Lorraine Cox. And 4 days later, about 5 miles away from the centre of Exeter, they found Lorraine's head and torso at a forested area called Tin Pit Hill. Unfortunately, the body had decomposed quite badly, and the coroner couldn't be certain exactly how she died. Detectives now arrested Christopher Main, the last person to be seen with her, and found out that he had been lying to them. This man wasn't Christopher Main. It was 22-year-old Azam Mangori, who had illegally entered the UK when his official application to move to England had been rejected. He maintained he had nothing to do with the disappearance of Lorraine. She hadn't been back to his flat with him. But police found an audio recording of him and Lorraine having a sexual encounter on the night she died, in an alleyway near where he lived. Mangori had recorded this on his mobile phone. It didn't seem that Lorraine had been forced into it, she'd been a willing participant. But on this recording, he could be heard offering her drugs and alcohol if she came back to his flat. And detectives had no doubt that this is exactly what Lorraine did in the state she was in that evening. Detectives were by now certain that it was Mangori who had murdered Lorraine. He had disposed of her clothing and all the possessions she'd had with her, and then they thought he'd taken her SIM card from her phone and used it to pretend to be her over the following week on text and Facebook. He'd even sent the middle finger emoji to her fiancé because Elise was constantly trying to get hold of her and he wanted her to stop hassling him. Whilst all the time he was sending these false messages, the centre of Exeter and social media was full of pictures of Lorraine and desperate attempts by her friends and family to find her. Further CCTV analysis showed Mangori caught on camera in shops, buying supplies to help him dispose of her body, including bin bags, tape, a suitcase, and an air purifier to hide the smell. When the evidence got so much, Mangori finally admitted that he was responsible for disposing of Lorraine's body, but her actual death had been an accident. He said he lied because he was terrified of being deported back to Iraq. He said he was a gay man and he had been brought up in the Kurdish region of Iraq with very strict parents, so he'd actually escaped to the UK to have a new life in the West. He said if he was to go back, if he'd been deported, he'd be stoned to death for his sexuality. Mangori told lots of different versions of what happened, but the final one he arrived at was that he and Lorraine had met and had a nice conversation on the street, which eventually led to them having sex in an alleyway close to his home. He told how he recorded it just in case anything went wrong, that was his words, and he wished he'd recorded all the events of that night to try and prove his innocence. He said they then went back to his flat where they both drank shots of alcohol, had sex a couple more times, and smoked drugs. He claimed that Lorraine pulled out a black substance from her pocket wrapped in foil, put a lighter underneath the foil to heat it up, and used a rolled up banknote to breathe in the vapour. When he tried it, he reckoned he had a very strange reaction and eventually passed out. Now, detectives knew he was lying, as a toxicology report concluded that Lorraine had no drugs in her system that night. But he continued with his version of events, saying that when he came round, he found Lorraine unconscious on his bathroom floor, at which point he tried to carry out CPR like he'd seen in the movies, but he soon realised he didn't have a clue what he was doing. When he was asked by detectives why he didn't attempt to get help or call an ambulance like you or I would, his response was that he was too busy on focusing how to do CPR correctly, and he didn't know how to call an ambulance. At that time, he said he thought about just fleeing the scene, but then he claimed to have hallucinated, saying how he thought he saw weird creatures coming out of Lorraine's mouth, something he later accepted was just hallucinations and not reality. He claimed this is why he stuffed a t-shirt in her mouth, which was to stop the creatures from leaving her body. But he'd done this with some force. He'd pushed a cloth so far back into Lorraine's mouth that it blocked her airways. And if she had still been alive at that moment, this would have been the cause of her death. Mangori was then asked about the videos that were later found of him vaping and listening to music as Lorraine's body lay in the room with him, just out of the camera shot. The music he was listening to was Chop Suey with Angels Deserve to Die. He said there was nothing sinister about this. He said it was just something to try and cheer him up and get him out of the depression he was feeling at the time. He also said he didn't realise that Lorraine was dead when he first hacked into her phone and social media accounts. He said, wait for this one, that his initial plan was to use her Facebook and phone for her until she woke up, which she genuinely believed she was going to do. He then admitted that when he knew she was dead, he carried on doing this so he wouldn't be linked to her death, so that no one would come to his flat because he didn't want any trouble. When asked about dismembering Lorraine's body, he said that once he realised she was dead, his mental health deteriorated further, and the next 4 to 5 days of his life were a living hell. But he believed that when he was dismembering her body, that he was only chopping up wet tobacco they'd been storing in his flat. He continued that he thought he was hiding the wet tobacco from his boss when asked what he was doing when disposing of Lorraine's body. Now, some officers believed that Lorraine's murder was a premeditated killing. We've already heard many disturbing aspects of his actions that night. Had he actually planned to lure any woman or man to his flat that night to carry out his terrible fantasies? Analysis of his phone and internet records show contact with both male and female escorts the night that Lorraine died. He certainly seemed to have an unnatural interest in amputees and dismemberment. He'd been thorough in his task, having even gone so far as to remove a tattoo on Lorraine's body, which showed she was diabetic. Police believed he had a deep sexual interest in dismemberment, as there were videos on his phone of men with prosthetic legs fighting, and he'd looked at amputation videos in the day before Lorraine's disappearance. Mangori used the internet to research how to cut up parts of the human body. He had viewed videos both before and after meeting Lorraine. The police digital team also found evidence that he'd used his phone to research the woodland at Timpit Hill, where parts of Lorraine's body had also been discovered. At the trial, QC Laws for the prosecution said that Mangori admitted it was him who cut up and disposed of Lorraine's body, thereby preventing her burial. You will not be asked to consider the question of who did that. As you will see, it took him some time to accept that fact, overwhelming though the evidence was. The jury was told he was a loner with an online gaming obsession, a cold and calculated killer who harboured dark fantasies about amputation. Laws spat out very clearly what had happened to Lorraine on the night she had died. He said she had the great misfortune to be spotted by him when she was walking home. He was out walking the streets alone. He went up to her. They'd never met one another before. He took advantage of her drunken state and had a sexual encounter with her in an alleyway. He then led her back to his room above a kebab shop in the city centre, and he killed her there. He cut up her body into 7 pieces and disposed of them. He mutilated the body in other ways. He disposed of her clothing and any of her possessions that she had with her, and he took the SIM card from her phone and used it to pretend to be her and pretend to the world that she was still alive. Laws revealed that almost 11,000 hours of CCTV from 400 cameras was seized, and he made it very clear this showed what had happened, from showing the meeting and the shops he went to buy the tools he needed to dismember and dispose of her body, as well as the digital world showing the cruel deception. DNA experts were called and established that Mangori was responsible for the disposal of Lorraine's body, hidden in bin liners and a sports bag. The court heard he cut up her body and cut off her arms and legs. Some of what was found on his phone was related to his crime, including images and videos from the internet showing the structure of the leg and amputation, and how to dig a grave by hand. Some of these images were seen before Lorraine was killed, and others when her body was actually in the room. In very emotional testimony, Lorraine's partner, Elise, told the court she would never recover from Lorraine's killing, and she said of herself, "That person died when the woman I loved had been murdered. I'm a shell of the person Lorraine knew. Although I'm still breathing, I'm not living. Most days, it's like the colour has been stolen from my life." At the end of the 5-week trial, Mangori was found guilty of murder, for which the judge jailed him for life, and he was told he must serve 20 years before being considered for parole. The judge said, "You chose to kill Lorraine Cox by suffocating her. By your actions, you murdered this bright, vivacious, intelligent young woman who had a whole life ahead of her." He said that Lorraine was incapacitated by drink when Mangori suffocated her by stuffing her vest into her mouth. The judge didn't agree with the theory we spoke about earlier, that it was a premeditated attack, saying, "I find it is a fact that you had not planned this killing in advance, and I reject the prosecution's earlier suggestion that you'd gone out that night looking for a victim to kill and whose limbs you could later amputate. I find it's a fact that you killed Miss Cox as a result of events in your room that night, and your reason for this gruesome means of disposing of Miss Cox's body was simply your cowardice in failing to report her death and attempting to hide the evidence of your crime served to compound the loss and hurt suffered by her partner, her father, her other family and her friends. They suffered 8 days of desperate hope and fruitless searching while you sat on your bed deciding how best to escape being held responsible for Miss Cox's murder by amputating and mutilating Miss Cox's body." After the trial, Lorraine's family spoke about Lorraine. They described her as the most kind-hearted, loving and generous girl, adding that she was the heartbeat of our family. "We hope and pray that no other woman or family has to go through what our beautiful girl suffered, or that any other family suffers the brutal, distressing experience we've all been through." They added the trial had been mentally and emotionally exhausting, but thanked everyone for the help searching for Lorraine while she was still missing. I want to talk to you about an aside here, which is that this case led to some vigilantism. 5 men associated with the kebab shop were initially arrested when the body was found, but later released without charge after police realised that Mangori was the killer. But 2 local men, 25-year-old Lewis Mearns and 26-year-old Brandon Burrows, both of particularly low IQs, targeted Naveed Rami because he worked at the kebab shop, which was beneath the room where Lorraine was murdered. Mearns and Burrows thought staff from the kebab shop were involved in the killing, and they located the chef, Naveed Rami, to his home in Exeter. They ambushed him on his doorstep. They accused him of cutting up that girl and called him a Turkish terrorist as they battered him about the head and body. Both denied racially aggravated battery, but were found guilty. Mearns was jailed 44 weeks, and Burrows for 50 weeks. It sounds like a horrendous attack. Mearns told the victim he would come back for him and stab him. And Narfield was terrified. He fled his home and moved hundreds of miles away from Exeter. And then Burrows, he had previous convictions for a racially aggravated offence and two for vigilante attacks on people who he falsely accused of being paedophiles. The judge told both men there was no solid reason for you to believe that Mr. Rami was involved in the killing of Lorraine Cox beyond your vigilantist and racist views about the murder. You attacked him in a vigilante-style revenge attack fueled by racism. You both angrily and obscenely accused him of being involved with the murder. Now, I don't know about you, but I see and read more and more about people taking vigilante action, and it makes me really, really uncomfortable, from the paedophile stings on Facebook to cases like the one we've just spoken about. So what do you make of what we've heard today? Unfortunately, it's yet another recent case where the CCTV makes chilling viewing as a woman walking home from socialising with friends is followed and then attacked. And for Lorraine, it was the second time in just a couple of years she'd been attacked by a man. And this time, she didn't escape with her life. I think it's made so much worse for the family when the murderer won't admit his guilt and keeps changing his story in a somewhat pathetic, desperate and futile attempt to get away with what he's done. Once again, it just shows a complete lack of respect when it's quite obvious that he was guilty. There's got to come a time, right, to drop the stupid stories and give those who love Lorraine the truth about her last hours, however painful it is for them to hear. I don't think there is too much else I can say here except to ask, when will this ever end? When will women finally be able to walk home safely without the risk of attack? It is, of course, too late for Lorraine and her family and friends, who are left with those unthinkable thoughts in the middle of the night about just what happened to Lorraine on that terrible night in Exeter. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the UK True Crime Podcast. To discuss this story and any other aspect of UK true crime, please head to Facebook and join over 96,000 of us who talk UK true crime 24/7. And to support the show, please head to patreon.com/UKTrueCrime for 75 full-length bonus episodes. Yep, 75. The latest is just out last week. And loads of other exclusive content. A huge thank you to the latest members of our community. That's Hayley Louise, Sharon Adj Nicole, Julie Depp and Paul Hardacre. Thank you all so much. Your support is just so incredibly appreciated. So please do come and join us. There is a special discount on annual memberships at the moment. I think it's 22% off to celebrate the beauty of red trousers. Just head to uktruecrime.com/uktruecrime. You know it makes sense. Okay, so that's all for me for another week. So until we speak again soon, please do take it easy. And remember, despite all the others, it's always the others. Stay classy. Cheerio for now.